Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is James Petras. It's always great having Jim back. Jim, of course, is Binghamton University, New York, professor emeritus. Oh, he's an expert on so many topics, so well known for Latin America, but he does so much extraordinary writing on Israel, Palestine, and most any other topic that that gets into Jim's focus at any point in time. And he regularly turns out, at least in recent years, when I've paid attention, to a new book every year, besides dozens of articles. And his newest book is called War Crimes in Gaza and the Zionist Fifth Column in America. Oh, indeed so. Topics that concern me greatly. Jim, it's great having you back on. I think you're in warmer climes at the moment than it is for me in Chicago.
Yes, it is. It's not too warm. It's in the low 40s right now here at 8 a.m., but it's supposed to go up to the high 60s, so I think it's very comfortable weather.
Well, if I'm lucky in Chicago, it may go up to the high 20s, but I think the forecast is the mid-20s. Which is pretty seasonable in Chicago this time of year, as long as it doesn't snow too much, and it usually doesn't. And if we stay out of single-digit temperatures and the wind doesn't blow up a gale, then we're fine. The wind in Chicago, as most people don't know, has nothing to do with the atmospherics. The so-called Windy City originated from the wind from politicians.
Yeah, a lot of hot air.
A lot of hot air, and Chicago has it like every place else. The bigger the city, the more hot air, and indeed we sure have plenty of it. Jim, there are so many things that get your focus and mine. We could throw a dot at a board and pick a great topic, but let me let you pick one that we can at least begin with.
Well, I think the one of the major considerations is what we can expect in the new year, given the changes that are taking place in different contexts. We have the new Congress and Senate. We have in Iraq, we have the return of a very important politician, Sadra, who's very violently against U.S. Occupation. We have Latin America, which has experienced significant growth in most parts, except for the collapsing economy in Mexico and the consequences in terms of the high violence and deaths. And we also have the picture in Asia, particularly the continuous dynamic growth of China confounding a lot of the free marketeers who talk about the necessary deregulation to get economies going. And finally, we have the countries' economies that are failing, which are following the IMF prescriptions, namely Spain, Ireland, Greece, and Portugal. So we have a lot to talk about, but I think the picture that I see for 2011 is largely a continuation of what we have had in 2010. There's no slowdown in the war, despite the periodical proclamations from the White House that the war is being won. We don't see that, and I don't see it for 2011. I see continuing high casualties in the for the U.S. I see we spending about $1 billion a day in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. No slowdown there. We have the continuation of the precarious economic situation. Here in California, the unemployment rate is 12.6%. That's above the so-called national average. But if we add in the people that are sub-employed, you get almost one out of four people here in California. There's a tremendous growth at the food kitchens and the homeless people. You see them all over. Even in Palm Springs, you see bag ladies and sitting on benches here, taking in the sun and trying to figure out where they're going to get the next meal. So I think the Congress is going to negotiate some unsavory deals with the White House to extend more and more benefits to the rich. And one thing in particular I've noticed, both in California and New York, the Democratic governors, Brown in California and Cuomo, are talking about curtailing the incomes and job security for public employees. These are people that received tens of millions of dollars from the unions, and the first thing they announce is that they're going to freeze any increase in wages and salaries. They say some of them are talking about wage and salary cuts. They're going to increase the share that is paid by the workers on their pensions and health plans. They also are talking about cutting tens of thousands of positions. Now, this shows the absolute bankruptcy of the public sector unions. Here they put in $50 and $60 million in the elections, and what the members get for it is a kick in the pants.
You know, Jim, I haven't followed Cuomo, the new governor of New York. I know he's the son of what was his first name? The other governor, Cuomo. I forget his first name. The father and the
Mario.
Son. Mario Cuomo. And I know Jerry Brown was twice governor before, many years ago, and he calls himself a Democrat. But like most other Democrats, he governs like a Republican. I doubt there'll be any difference in what he does from what Schwarzenegger did. And I mean, he wrecked California, and I think Brown came in on a mandate of wrecking it even more. And a big for me, Jim, is that the Republicans, Obama declared austerity to be policy going back a year ago, and Republicans have come in under a mandate to cut spending, and the kind of spending they want to cut. They're not going to cut any funding for the wars. They're not going to cut any funding for the corporate interests who bankroll them. They're going to cut funding for the people in dire need who need help, not cuts, but they're going to give them cuts, and Obama's going to go along with it.
Well, I think the other rhetoric they're using is decentralization. That is, they're going to shift more and more of the public services, education, health, etc., to the cities and municipalities and counties without increasing their sources of revenue. In other words, at the federal level, they're shifting to the state level. The state level is shifting to the municipalities. And the municipalities are heavily in debt. They don't have, many of them don't have an economic base. And that is going to deepen the social polarization. For example, in Beverly Hills, it's fine. You have millionaire rows, so getting control over municipal policies on education and health is no problem. But if you shift it to South L.A., mostly Afro-Americans and Latinos, that's going to create vast problems. So the rhetoric of decentralization is really to heighten the geographical inequalities between high-income municipalities and low-income. That's why we always pushed for the state and federal government to take on those responsibilities, because they could share them across economic barriers. And I think this kind of phony progressive rhetoric, I saw where Andrew Cuomo, the new governor, says, I'm going to take a 7% cut in salaries, and so will my fellow executives here in Albany, in the state capital, but he's making 190 some thousand, so 7%. He'll still be making 180,000. But what about the janitors, the cleaning people? When they get a hit, that's going to seriously affect the family basket expenses. And we see this across the board, a phony rhetoric about equal sacrifice, when in fact, disproportionately, all of these sacrifices are being done, essentially hurting wage and salary people. Particularly, they're going after the unions. Now, some of the states have announced that they're going to try to outlaw any strikes by any public employee, school teachers, etc. One of the things the federal government does when the White House is attack countries like Belarus or Venezuela, they claim limitations on this or that kind of opposition activity. But if unions don't have the right to strike, they have no leverage on the employers. Arbitration is something that has to be agreed to both parties. So why should the employers go to arbitration when they know there's no they'll have the federal or state government jailing any unionists that try to put some muscle in their collective bargaining through some kind of job action? So I think the Democrats and the Republicans are teaming up to attack the last bastion of unionism in the U.S. And the rhetoric in the mass media is the unions are too strong. The unions in the United States in the private sector represent only about 7.5% of the labor force. If you throw in the public sector, it's probably between 30% and 35%. Public sector workers have meaningful union representation, and that minority that's unionized has higher wages than those who are not. And they're going to take that away. They're going to, now one part of the legislation, conservative legislation, I'm in favor of, and that is the automatic dues deduction, the automatic decision by the union leaders to spend money financing the Democratic Party. The legislation on the table in some states now is that the unions cannot finance these phony Democrats without consulting their members on any money that goes to their political lobbying fund. And that's very important because two things. One, the Democrats will no longer get a free ride from the union bosses. They'll have to do something or the members won't finance them. The second thing is the unions will have to collect dues from their members, not automatically. That is, it have to be voluntary contributions. So if a union official, like most of them, makes between $350,000 and $500,000 a year, the members might say, hey, fat cat, you're not doing anything for me. I'm not contributing my dues this month. And I think these conservative changes, they're meant to weaken any kind of unionism, may provide the basis to redemocratize or make the unions more responsible to their members instead of to the hacks in the Democratic Party.
Oh, Jim, I absolutely agree. It's hard to know what will be the eventual result of any policy, but there's no question that the unions, the high watermark for the unions, it's been a long time since I've written anything about them, but I've written a few times about them, including how the UAW sold out their workers to GM and Chrysler before GM ever declared bankruptcy, and then it got worse after that. But the high watermark of unionism back in the 1950s, when overall over a third of U.S. workers were unionized, and manufacturing had not yet been offshored, so the combination of taking high paid manufacturing jobs and shipping them to China or Bangladesh or wherever, we have a society of service workers. Any manufacturing job, maybe not any, but so many, the great majority are vulnerable. You know, the unions rise up and say we want this or that, which they don't do, but if they did, then the company just threatens to move to a cheaper wage area. It used to be in Mexico, I guess maybe it still is a little bit, but most often it's China or Haiti or again Bangladesh, I mean, where they can hire people practically slave labor. And these jobs have just disappeared. They're not around anymore. The ones that are remaining are so much fewer than what we used to have. And I imagine they're all going to go, except for maybe jobs related to national security. So you don't want to ship them to another country where we could be spied on much more easily than over here. So we have service workers. And even the ones that are unionized, service workers get virtually no rights, weak benefits, low pay. What kind of a country relies on putting people to work, working at Walmarts and places like that, and so few benefits that are eroding, and the government goes along with this, and it doesn't matter whether we're talking about Democrats or Republicans. I just call it a duopoly. It's really one and the same thing, and it's from column A and column B, but all the choices are the same.
You're right, Steve. I just want to point out one thing. The financial press, the business section of the newspaper, announced just a day or two ago that Ford and General Motors have made a significant recovery in their profits. There's been an increase in the sale of cars in 2010. And Caterpillar and some of the other companies have also reported very high earnings this year. But, you know, all the cutbacks and givebacks that the unions did and that the companies enforced has not been reversed. That is, now that there's a greater demand, a greater sales, greater profits, they're not hiring back workers. What they're doing is intensifying the rate, the work rhythm in the factory. So you're getting the same amount of workers employed that existed during the worst of the recession, and no additional hiring with this recovery. Not only in terms of employment, they're working less workers and more output through higher exploitation, but they're not returning any of the givebacks that the United Auto Workers and other union officials gave to so-called help the companies get back on their feet. Well, the companies are back on their feet, and they're not increasing their share of health benefits, pension benefits, etc. So it was a phony argument that you give concessions, the companies come back, the economy does better, and the workers will get back what they gave up. That's not the case. It's not going to happen until a certain degree of militancy and advocacy from the workers and the worker organizations exist. The companies just take what they got, and they're going to push ahead on this level.
And what's happening with the auto workers, Jim, of course, is happening across the country. And so many of the union bosses do more representing the corporations than they do their own rank and file. I mean, it really is outrageous. We need a resurgence of the wobblies. They still exist, but, of course, they're not like they were a century ago before they got targeted and just not destroyed, but weakened so much they were a shadow of what they were at one time. And they certainly I don't remember the statistics, but they never represented a majority of workers in the country. But they really believed in union representation and social justice and worker rights, and workers really are just being consigned to no rights. You take what we give you, and if you complain about it, then we'll just get rid of you and get somebody else, or we'll send you a job overseas, and it again right across the board, Jim, with all of the benefits that people have. It bothers me so much that I don't think most people in the country understand that the benefits that they have or expect to get one day, like Medicare and Social Security, or heaven forbid for people who don't have it, if they need it, Medicaid. I don't think they realize that these programs are on the chopping block, and slowly they'll be eroded and they'll be gotten rid of, and it'll be done so cleverly that people won't realize what's happening. This 2% cut, 1 year cut in the payroll tax, I think that was absolutely outlandish. There was such better things to have done than that. You drain the Social Security fund.
Yes, Steve, and this new Congress, they will be voting very shortly on raising the cap on the federal debt limit. Now, that's going to be a big fight because the Republicans are going to say to the White House, we will not raise the cap until you cut back on the current budget deficit by slashing and burning Medicare, Medicaid, and the Social Security.
Oh, I think that's exactly what they're going to do.
And that is going to be a keynote. Obama's going to say, well, it's very important not to paralyze the government. We've got to raise the debt cap from $13 trillion, I think it is now, to $15 trillion, and I will have to come to some agreement and compromise with the Republicans. And at that point, that's the tip-off for the big sellout. And I think that's a very big issue. I know I collect Social Security. I know the inflation rate, as I calculate it, has been about 3% in the basic items, health, food, gas, etc. And I say to myself, I have lost 6% on my Social Security payments, both in 2010 and 2009, because of this bozo in the White House who says, according to his consumer price index, there's been no inflation. Everyone that lives on a salary and wage knows that that is a lie.
It's a
lie.
Because
they exclude essential items like food and gas and health.
And for senior people on Social Security and Medicare, of course, Jim, health is a major, major item. If you're in your 20s or 30s, well, if you have coverage, if your employer provides it, or at least provides most of it, you're okay. But you don't have health issues with the frequency that you may have as you get older and older. So it's major. And health costs keep going up every year. They have their own inflation cycle. Jim, there's no question that the official numbers, probably across the board, are all rigged to look more benign than they really are. And the one that appalls me the most are the unemployment numbers, where the economist I like to follow from his Shadow Stats website, John Williams, he re-engineers the unemployment rate based on the way it was calculated in 1980, and the last figure that I saw was something like 22.6%.
Yes, I think that's very true, Steve. And we also have the growing repression of Latino and Afro-American workers because of the tremendous assault on immigrant workers. I don't think a lot of people have paid attention to this, but there's been hundreds of thousands of raids on people's houses, on people's social events, at weddings and baptisms, and at the workplace, and people have been seized violently in the style. I don't like to use this terminology, but it's in the style of the Gestapo. Here is Steve Lenman at a wedding of some Latino couples from Central America in Chicago, and all of a sudden, gangbusters You have the SWAT team coming, breaking down the door. The kids are screaming, and they grab off a dozen people, of which maybe half of them are born in the United States, are of Latin origins, but have been living here 25 years, 20 years, raising their kids. Suddenly they're trundled off to jail, isolation, until maybe in a week their neighbor, their relatives can get to them with a lawyer and say, look, this guy has been here 25 years, a citizen, etc. And the other six that have been working here providing for their families, deported. They may have a car, they may have a house, they may have their kids in school. That's Gestapo tactics, and that's been what the hallmark of the Obama administration as far as dealing with the undocumented workers and with Latinos and immigrants who get profiled all the time.
Oh, indeed, so, Jim, and I've written a few articles on that. The Homeland Security Act that has established this Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, operation, I absolutely call them a Gestapo operation. I mean, there's no question. They target the innocent along with the undocumented and the undocumented. I mean, the vicious lies that are spread about absolutely decent people, starting with the reason they're here in the first place. Who the devil wants to leave their country to come to a strange place where you probably don't speak the language and you literally risk your life getting here? There are people, the last article I wrote, and I actually have another one, Jim, that is ready to go, but stuff, breaking news happens, and I just have to just do something and get articles out on that. I've got another.
Well, the only problem I have, Steve, I think it's brilliant muckraking that you're doing, is digging up all these exposés. I only wish you had access to the mass media.
Oh, if I only had that, Jim. I actually, the article that I put out yesterday, if you had a chance to see it, I wrote it about a Chicago area woman who was wrongfully charged. She's been in jail. None of it ever should have happened, and she's going to go on trial for something that at most should be a misdemeanor, and heaven only knows how they're going to crucify her, because higher ups are being protected, and she's taking a fall for them. And I sent my article this morning. I was asked to send it both to the Chicago Tribune and the Sun-Times. I would be absolutely astonished if they do anything with it. And my kicker was that this woman is going on trial next week, and she's innocent.
Yes, and that's multiply that by $500,000 every 500,000 people every 6 months, and
you get
the true dimensions of this persecution of working people. The point is, they grab people, they punish them, and it's a form of exemplary punishment to intimidate the rest of us. If it can happen to this woman, it can happen to anybody. Keep your head down and keep your nose to the grindstone, and don't complain about things. Otherwise, it could happen to you.
Oh, absolutely, Jim, and we're getting to the end of the program, but the article that I have for tomorrow is on the Israeli Knesset deciding to form a committee to target leftist organizations. So anybody who's a progressive, anybody who's a liberal, anybody who believes they have a right to dissent, they are now the enemy of the state in Israel. Well, they're the enemy of the state in America as well. But the Knesset went through the first round of authorizing this. Now it has to come back from their parliamentary procedure. It goes through one process, then it comes back for another one. But I'll bet you they pass a law that they will have a committee that will make the McCarthy witch hunts of the 1950s look tame by comparison.
Well, I think you're right, Steve, and one of the great tragedies in this is that not one of the 52 major American Jewish organizations who are so active in promoting Israel as a democracy will not say a peep.
Or the U.S. media, Jim. This is all over the Israeli print media. Even the right-wing Jerusalem Post had stuff on this, and they expressed concern about what in the hell is going on. I mean, they were quoting people. They were just blasting the Israeli government doing this. I checked several of the major U.S. Papers, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, L.A. Times, nothing. not a word about it.
They're sitting on their mouth.
I mean, they just stay silent on this. I mean, literally a fascist thing going on there. Extremely dangerous.
Well, I hope some of the local Chicago well-to-do Jews, Pritzker and Rahm Emanuel, I hope they stand on their high legs and squeak something about that, but I'm absolutely certain they won't.
Oh, they won't, and I dread the thought of Emanuel becoming my mayor. Oh, my God. Bring back Edith Daly over Rahm Emanuel. Jim, it was terrific as always.
Okay, Steve, thanks a lot for calling me.
Oh, bye. I enjoyed it so much. I'll send you an email, and I look forward to the next time.
Okay, very good, Steve.
Thank you,
very
Jim.
Very good, thank you.
And join us this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, of course, 1 p.m. More terrific guests like Jim and important topics. I mean it all the time. This is what I hope this program will be all the time. Do make it a regular habit.